produce themselves, then ESCOM, everybody in here, so that we know each other. Over to you, members.
Good morning. My name is Ornel De Beer. I'm from the Western Cape, a member of this committee.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Zola Mlenzana, member of the Select Committee representing the interests of the province of the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Groenewald, representing the Northwest Province and a member of the committee.
Morning. My name is Mbongsen Zulu Mdogatwana. Represent the province of KwaZulu-Natal.
Good morning. My name is Papira Sereti Tau, member of this committee representing the Northern Cape in the Council of Provinces.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Bosana Jacobs from the Free State.
Good morning, man.
So, can you
talk now? Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Mabija Lebohane, representing Limpopo Province, and I'm the whip of this select committee. Thank you.
Mr. Mohammed, can you introduce yourself and the others will follow?
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Mohammed Adam. I'm the Divisional Executive Regulation and Legal at ESCOM.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Karen De Villiers, and I'm Parliamentary Affairs Manager for ESCOM.
Good morning, Chair and the members. My name is Hilary Joffe. I'm the spokesperson for ESCOM.
Morning, members. Lisa Khomodacha from DPE.
Chair and member, good morning. My name is Chuse Chueu. I'm from ESCOM, responsible for corporate affairs. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Nombi Nematomela from ESCOM Parliamentary Affairs.
Good morning, Chair.
Why is the lady...
Sorry, I thought it was four members only. Morning, my name is Paula Charles. I'm from the E-News Channel Africa.
Morning, Chair. My name is Samuel Mandiwana, Parliamentary Liaison Officer, DPE.
Okay. Those who are seated at the back there, can you just come nearer to the mic, all of you, and then introduce yourself, everybody, can you all come nearer the mic?
Morning, Chair. My name is Bodhi Salane. I'm from
DPE. So as you also say,
time. Amanda, PMG.
Hi, Lee Bramwell, parliamentary researcher.
Misal Jaffe, ethical political consultant.
Louise Flanagan, the Star newspaper.
Rodney Mnisi, Content Advisor for the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Christopher, and I'm from 7-8.
I'm Donald Presley from Business Report.
Sir William Abbott, Energy Researcher, Portfolio Committee, Energy.
Eric Okotso, Committee Secretary for the Portfolio Committee on Energy.
Caroline Masanya from DPE.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Loli Sibis. I am the committee secretary.
Committee assistant.
Good morning. My name is Eric Boscati, content advisor for the committee.
Good morning. My name is Renal Barreta. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Thank you so much. Today, like I said, we are with ESCOM in the Department of Public Enterprises, but the main business is with ESCOM. And we're going to get the impact of tariff increases on ESCOM's balance sheet. You see the room is full. This is a very important, very, very important topic. Without any waste of time, Mr. Mohammed, I'll give you this opportunity to brief the committee.
Chair and honorable members, thank you very much for the opportunity. Firstly, can I just say apologies on behalf of our chief executive. There have been numerous engagements in Parliament this morning, and he will try and join us later if possible, but unfortunately can't be with us at the moment. Chair, if I can start. What I'm going to try and do, Chair, is just try and sketch four members of the committee, the NERSA decision, the rationale, some of the implications, and then talk generally in terms of what ESCOM is trying to do about the decision and the impact on ESCOM. As a quick summary, Chair, and I'll try and unpack some of the issues as we go into the detail. The first point is that with the decision NERSA has made, it leaves us a revenue shortfall, if you compare it to the application we've made, of 225 billion rand over the five-year period. Our view is that without appropriate intervention, and we'll talk a little bit more about what appropriate intervention is, that this will have a significant impact on ESCOM. And as we said at the time of submitting the application to NERSA and during the public hearings, is certainly there's room for improvement within ESCOM and we can be more efficient, but the point is you're not going to make up such a huge shortfall with efficiencies alone. And what we are looking at, Chair, is what we are referring to in ESCOM as an integrated delivery program, where we will continue to implement the committed savings of 30 billion rand, which we indicated in our application we would make. So we've started identifying where those savings would come from, and that was built into our application. Beyond that, we will continue to look for even more efficiencies over and above the 30 billion rand over the period. Gee, we have acknowledged, and this will mean that we need to do this in consultation with various stakeholders, including our shareholder, government as our shareholder. We'll then need to look at how the business can be reshaped. It's about how we prioritize differently, how we can rephase, and how we actually cut the cloth we've been given to suit the needs of ESCOM going forward. The next area, Chair, that is included in the Integrated Delivery Program is once we've done all of that, we also need to look to the regulatory framework and the rules to assist in addressing this challenge. And I'll explain a little bit more about what I mean by that as we go through the presentation. And then lastly, Chair, I think it's important is once we've done everything and tried to look at all of the issues that are possible in terms of living within what NERSA has allowed, is we may need to look at what the remaining gap is if it's not closed and what additional support may be required. And when I talk support, Chair, it could be broad support in terms of, and we've been saying this consistently in regard to our system, that there are some things that we've acknowledged as ESCOM during our MYPD3 application process that we cannot do on our own. We need to partner with stakeholders, we need to partner with government as shareholder to try and achieve some of our objectives. So that's what the reshaping part would deal with, that's what the additional support part would deal with. It's just thinking creatively, thinking innovatively about how as a country and how ESCOM in supporting the country do we rise to this challenge, which is an enormous challenge for us. Chair, if I go back and just recap what we asked for, we believe that the application that we made, it was based on the regulatory formula that is prescribed by NERSA. So, Chair, if I just go back, the way the tariffs are determined is NERSA looks at our primary energy costs, they look at our operating costs, and then they give us an appropriate return and depreciation, and that is the additional revenue you need, and that translates into a price increase. So that was the basis of the application we made. In our application, Chair, we put in place certain interventions to move us to shift our performance in all matrices in line with world-class utilities. And there are areas where we believe there's more we could do, and that's what we were targeting over a 5-year period. With regard to most of our costs, we kept it in the application to single-digit increases. So primary energy increases across the board of 8.6%. If you look at coal, we shared with NERSA, we shared in the public hearings our difficulties around coal price, and indicated that we need to enter into a compact with the industry to limit it to 10%. Operating increases, we limited to 8%. Chair, we also, in our application, indicated that from a policy perspective, it was in line with the electricity pricing policy that indicated that we need to migrate to cost-reflective prices. And what that means is just that the cost of supplying electricity, the price at which you sell electricity should cover the cost of supplying electricity, the borrowings against that, so that you have in the longer term not only a viable ESCOM, but a viable industry. And at the time of the application, Chair, we also tried to show what had happened to the costs over the last 2 decades. The fact that they've been declining in real terms, the fact that one of the years in the recent past, we had actually been selling electricity at a price that was lower than our costs, and that's what we needed to claw back over time. We still believe, Chair, that as we go forward as an industry and as a country, that is still a goal that needs to be achieved. What we acknowledge in our application is certainly we need to have a discussion about the phasing of how you get there. In our application, Chair, we pointed out that if we followed the electricity pricing policy, we would have had to achieve cost-reflective pricing within the first 2 years of MIPD3. Taking into account the economy, what's happening in South Africa, we said that we believe we need to look at a different path, and our proposal was to rephase that over a longer period, so over a 5-year period. Then, Chair, we were working around NERSA's determined rate of return, and the targeted return was 8.16%. Our application was migrating from 0.9%. At the end of the 5-year period, we would have got to 7.8%. If you average the return over the period, you get to a return of just under 4% over the period. So we were never, ever in the period going to get to 8.16. And we'll talk about what NERSA has done about that. And then, Chair, there were certain pegs in the ground that allowed us to make the application, and that is certainly government support in terms of 350 billion rand in guarantees. There was a 60 billion rand subordinated loan by government, which was very useful in enabling us to access funding for our capital infrastructure program. And then our debt levels were maintained within the 350 billion rand guarantee ceiling. 80% of our debt at the time, we said, had already been secured, and we put in our application, we put in about 337 billion rand as capital expenditure we would need over the period. So we believe that this application was robust in the sense that it took into account all the things that need to be balanced for the country and for ESCOM, and it also was more robust in terms of the risks that could materialize. So, Chair, if we now go to what NERSA decided, and what we've tried to do, and if we start with the graph on the top of the page, Chair, you'll see what it shows is on the left-hand side the revenue that ESCOM applied for, which is 1.87 trillion rand, and then on the extreme right it shows the allowed revenue that NERSA allowed. That's 862. That gives you the 225 billion rand I'm talking about. What it then shows is where the disallowances come from, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. So you can see primary energy in total, Chair, approximately 61 billion rand was disallowed. In operating costs, 47 billion rand. Depreciation, 45 billion. In terms of IPPs, 12.8 billion. And I'll explain the rationale by NERSA for this. Integrated demand management, about 8 billion. And then on the return, 49.1 billion. So what has been, I think, one of the consequences that has allowed us some time to reflect and try and build a robust and sustainable solution is the picture shown on the graph at the bottom of the page, Chair. What this shows you is if you then take the NERSA decision and you look at how the disallowed amounts are phased over the 5-year period, what you will see, Chair, is that in year one, it's lowest, and then the biggest portion of the disallowances start in years 3, 4, and 5. So year one, the disallowance is about 10 billion rand, year two, 24 billion rand in total for the first 2 years, 34 billion rand, and thereafter 41, 62, and 88 billion rand. Chair, this picture gives us the space to try and solve and find a robust solution, because had it been different, had the bars been different, I think we would have been in crisis mode right now. Fortunately, Chair, if you look at how the disallowances have been phased, it has given us the space to take time to analyze what has happened, to understand what has happened, and then as I talk about the integrated delivery program, you will see what we're trying to do. And the idea, Chair, is to use the first 2 years to try and do as much as possible in terms of ESCOM and things within its own control, and then engaging our key stakeholders in order then to try and find a sustainable solution and put us on a path not only of financial security, but generally sustainability for the country in terms of security of supply, financial sustainability, and to get us onto a sustainable footing. So, Chair, if we go to the next slide, and I won't go through all of the detail, but I thought the honourable members might be just interested in some sort of flavour as to what is the rationale and what did NERSA decide. And I am aware that NERSA has also made presentations to Parliament, so they may have covered some of this. A lot of this, Chair, is taken from the Reasons for Decision document, which is published on their website. But, Chair, just to touch on some of the high-level issues. So if you look at primary energy, we asked in total for about 355 billion rand. NERSA has allowed us 293. And some of the reasons given by NERSA is, firstly, they have used our MYPD2 projected costs as opposed to the actual numbers that we ended MYPD2 with. The second main reason, Chair, which is not on the slide, but if I can just mention it, is most of our fleet, the generation fleet, is beyond its midlife. So we have aging plant in general. And what we have done is we've made assumptions around burn rate, which effectively means how efficiently we can convert coal into electricity power. And the number we've used before is 0.55 tons per megawatt hour. We've then, for the MYPD3, projected it to move to 0.57, which is a worse performance because of the aging plant. NERSA has disallowed that and said, no, it should be 0.56. So, Chair, if you look at some of those decisions, it's a matter of the assumptions NERSA is making versus the assumptions we're making. And maybe at this point I should explain. Chair, if you look at the way the regulatory formula works, is we look at our numbers, we look at the business, and we project for the next 5 years, and that's how we make our application. As you're all aware, no one can project into the future absolutely correctly. So it's all based on projections, based on our past performance, based on what we see coming. So we project the cost and we submit it to NERSA. NERSA would also, in coming to their decision, make certain assumptions around efficiency, around volumes, around forecasts. The example I've given you, they may use benchmarking and say that's another, you know, better number than the number we've given. What the regulatory mechanism does have built in within it is a mechanism, and it's referred to loosely as the regulatory clearing account, the RCA, but it's more complicated than that. It's a mechanism that when the actuals materialize, there's a mechanism in certain areas to reconcile the actuals to what was forecasted. And when we talking about using the regulatory rules, this is what we are talking about engaging NERSA on to get clarity on those issues, and I'll come to it in a minute. So, Chair, as a start, what you see happening is NERSA has used certain assumptions and benchmarks, and we need more information and want to engage NERSA on the benchmarks they've used, what information they've used, because clearly there's a difference in the assumptions they've made and what we are experiencing in terms of actual prices we are experiencing with our coal mines. So there's a disjuncture in terms of that, and that's what we're trying to engage NERSAR. So if you look at the next area, DMP stands for Demand Management Participation, and effectively, this is a tool that the system operator needs to manage a tight system. And we contract for customers to participate in demand on a short-term basis so that we can manage the system in times of constraint. What NERSA has said, Chase, first, they've disallowed about 9 billion of this amount on the basis that once Medupi and Kusile come online, there'll be sufficient capacity. And again, Chair, you can see, this is in the realm of now, what assumptions am I using and what do I think is going to happen with the demand, and that's where we have different views. The second more important one is NERSA has indicated that they do not support the power buyback program that we embarked on, and that's why they allowed, disallowed this number. Chair, in this regard, we believe that NERSA was mistaken, because in our application we were explicit that this the amounts for DMP, although it was in a heading called DMP and power buybacks, was only for DMP. There was no money included in the MYPD3 application for power buybacks. Power buybacks. The power buybacks is, because the system was so constrained, we were looking at various options to try and manage the system. And the idea around power buybacks is that you could contract with customers for a fixed period to reduce demand, effectively that's what it means, and you would have to compensate them for doing that. And the way we worked out the compensation is it would be less than our other generating options, so it works from an effectiveness efficiency perspective, it makes sense. And there were concerns raised about the power buyback, about the impact on the economy and those sorts of things, because it was targeted mainly at your smelters. Our contracts were designed in such a way that for those who participated in those schemes, it was a condition that there were no job losses, and it was a condition that they manage all of their supplier contracts, so they don't default on supplier contracts by virtue of these agreements. What we have conceded, Chair, is that was a short-term mechanism to get us, tide us over a particular period. It's not a sustainable solution to run a power system. You can't run a power system with long-term interventions like that. So if we go to independent power producers, you'll recall in our application we said we're asking for 13% for Eskom, 3% for independent power producers. In effect, what the decision does roughly, it's given Eskom about 6% and IPPs about 2%. And NERSA's reasoning here is that if you look at how quickly we've managed to sign the deal and people have been able to construct, they believe that all of the IPPs will not come in on the timing of the program that was submitted. So they believe some of it will come in outside the MYPD3 period, so they've deducted that amount from the IPP, so about 10 billion from that amount. So if you look at operating costs, here again, a deduction of about 50 billion rand. There were some areas where NERSA believes that Eskom can do certain things more efficiently. There are issues around our headcount and how, again, this is an area where NERSA used the MYPD2 projected numbers as opposed to our actual numbers. NERSA, in their application, talks about a number of 38,000 employees. At the moment, we are 43,450 employees. So we have indicated that, because the starting point of the assumption is incorrect, there's no way we can actually get down to those lower numbers in terms of manpower costs. The second issue is we within the organization, we reorganized to centralize some of the functions in terms of support and strategic functions to support the line business. And NERSA interpret these costs as corporate overhead costs. But in the process, what we did is we moved certain essential functions in line. So, for example, procurement is essential. The line businesses need procurement support. And we just moved it to a central place in corporate because that was more effective and more efficient. So there are areas like that where some costs were disallowed, but if you actually look at what we did, we believe it's costs that we should have been entitled to. The other important one is integrated demand management. And in our application, we asked for 13 billion rand. NERSA has allowed 5 billion rand. and they indicated that a government agency needs, you know, will be formed in due course that should be responsible for demand management. In our application, when it was made, we conceded that that is government policy, and in the long term we support that, and if, you know, the DSM or the IDM program needs to go outside of ESCOM, that wasn't an issue. Our concern was, given the urgency over the next 2 years, that we can't lose momentum with the establishment of an agency, all of that, that ESCOM should be allowed to roll out some of these things. But in any event, this has been the NERSA decision. So, Chief, and the second point they raised is a lot of the money they took away from the solar water heating program on the basis that, in any event, if you look at it from an efficiency perspective, this is high cost and really low efficiency in terms of savings. So that would be the impact in terms of IDM. Then, Chair, about the areas I spoke about, the return and depreciation. What NERSA has done is, on the return component, they've disallowed an amount of about 40 billion rand, and what that comes from is how they've revalued our asset base, what is called the regulatory asset base. They've recalculated the targeted return, and they say it's no longer 8.16, it should be about 7.65. But again, Chair, if you look at the application and the results of what they've done, ESCOM's return is nowhere near that. We're still achieving on average about 3.8, 3.9% return over the period. So we're not even achieving, again, NERSA's targeted rate of return. And lastly, Chair, depreciation, again, there's a disallowance there of about 45 billion. And this is a function of the value of the regulatory asset base. And if I can just come back to what I explained earlier, Chair, the way the regulatory formula works is as we spend for the capital expenditure program, so let's say we need to spend 100 rand. NERSA doesn't give us 100 rand back. The way we recoup our capital cost is through the return component and through the depreciation component. So if you need to spend 100 rand, and let's say the return is 10% and the depreciation is 10%, you only get 20 rand. But over the life of the asset, you would have recovered a return and you would have recovered the money that you've spent on the asset. And that's how the regulatory formula works. So it's like any other business. If you want to start a factory, you go to the bank, you borrow money. As you charge your customers, you charge them, and over the period you service your debt, which has paid for your capital infrastructure. ESCOM is funded in exactly the same way. So these return components and the depreciation components is around our ability to recover the capital costs we've already spent over the life of the asset. Okay? And Chair, these parameters, all of this is crucially important because all of this goes towards strengthening your balance sheet, and then you can go with a strong balance sheet when you need to borrow money and be able to borrow for capital expansion or for whatever other reason we need to borrow. Okay. So, Chair, the other example I just want to give at a high level, there are some areas, and I gave one example earlier, where, again, NERSA believes that ESCOM can do certain things more efficiently. So, for example, in distribution, they say we can build distribution lines at 1.74 million per kilometer, as opposed to our figure of closer to 2.1. Now, our view is, these are the prices we're experiencing in the market. We go out in tenders. This is what's there. This is the actual. There's an assumption made on a different cost. There's references to benchmarks. And we would like to engage with NERSA on a process that looks at the costs, looks at the actuals, tries to find the benchmarks, and hopefully use this year to try and find each other in terms of actually what is a prudent and efficient cost, because clearly we're differing on what it is. So there are areas like that where it's a matter of just doing more homework, and if we can find each other, it can solve the problem for the next 4 years going forward. So, Chair, in summary, our view is that when you look at what we asked for and where NERSA is in terms of the determination, there are different views as to what is efficient cost, and certainly, let me not say that there's no room for improvement in ESCOM and we're perfect and efficient in every way. That is not my point, Chair. I'm saying certainly there's a long way for us to go. But in certain areas, like coal, like the lines issue I'm talking about, there's a different view on what is efficient. And we need to engage with NERSA as to how we address this particular issue. NERSA has expressed a view around our execution capability. So if you look previously, Chair, we were doing capital expenditure per annum in the region of about averaging 50 billion rand spent per annum. We put in our application to do about 65 thereabouts per annum. I think with this year, you know, financial results are still being sorted out, but we would have achieved more or less about 60 billion. So we believe we can do 60 billion per annum. NERSA is of the view that from an execution capability perspective, you know, we won't be able to do as much as we say we want to do. We've also explained that whether we like it or not, in terms of where we are from a system perspective, we're going to have to try and do more cement bond refurbishment and spend the capital expenditure. See, then the issues around IDM, DMP, issues around different views and steps that are necessary to ensure security of supply into the future. And I think this has just informed the difference in terms of where NERSA has made certain decisions versus ours. It's different assumptions and projections, when things will be phased in, when plant will be coming online, when the IPPs will come online. Admittedly, we are conservative because we're running the system, and if there are any problems, it comes back to us. So we do take a conservative view, because one area where you want to be robust is with regard to security of supply risk. Then, to the other area, to, you know, call it another bucket, is there are a number of costs that Eskom experience, and the one example is insurance as an example, where the cost increases, it's like medical aid inflation, don't reflect CPI or PPI. They've got their own inflation indices and they move to different indices. And this is what we've experienced in a number of areas, and NERSA has lumped this together under other costs, and they've basically disallowed quite a significant amount in other costs on the basis that these should track inflation. So again, it's a different assumption as to what's going to happen over time. And Chair, I've already explained, they've used some different benchmarks which we'd like to see, which we'd like to approach them around possibly reviewing or doing benchmarks again so we can get to a proper base as we go forward. And then the last point is areas we have already pointed out where they've taken a different starting point for cost. So if you look at coal costs as an example, our actual cost that we experience today is already higher than what NERSA is allowing us. And we're saying it's going to be practically impossible to achieve some of the costs and efficiency targets that NERSA has set for us. So if we go to the next slide, and I think I've tried to give a picture of what NERSA has done, the reasons for it, and immediate implications for Eskom. But if you start just thinking broader than Eskom, and also within Eskom at a more strategic level, say, these are some of the strategic implications we see flowing from the decision. The first point, Chair, is that NERSA has not explicitly said, aside from the area of IDM, Integrated Demand Management, where it says another agency should do this, they have not explicitly said, Eskom, you can't do this project, or you shouldn't be doing this, or you shouldn't be doing that. So there's no explicit curtailment of Eskom's mandate. However, the implications of the decision means we need to raise certain policy issues together with our shareholder to ensure alignment as to how we deal with some of the challenges. So, for example, Jim, as you will recall, our MYPD3 application has not included in it any funding for capacity beyond Kusile. So if there's a role for Eskom contemplated beyond Kusile, that's not built in. We'll have to talk to our shareholder, talk to government as to how that then is factored into the picture. The future role in IDM, NERSA has made a decision, government policy seems to indicate that that's the way they want to go. Then we need to be clear around the funds that are currently in Eskom and who will then take it over and how will it be managed. The issue around further government support, and here, Chair, it's government, but it's other stakeholders. We spoke about the issues around stakeholders participating in managing demand. In our application, we spoke about the possibility of an energy conservation scheme to try and manage demand so it can help us through at least the next 2 years when the system is very tight. So when we talk government support, it's all of those things that we would need from stakeholders, from government, and from government as shareholder to try and jointly work within the NERSA decision. And lastly, Chair, I've highlighted the issue of coal prices, and our view is, and I think our Chief Executive said it, we've said it during our MYPD3 application, it's going to be extremely difficult for us to contain coal costs beyond, you know, we've said in the application 10%. The coal mining industry made submissions at the public hearing saying that there's no way they can keep the costs down. So if Eskom, you know, coal is one of our biggest inputs. If we're unable to control the price of one of our biggest inputs, but we're capped on the selling price of electricity, it's just not going to work. It's not going to be sustainable. And our view all along was that we need to declare coal as a strategic national resource, firstly, and government has made significant strides in that direction. And second, we need to look at the possibility of dealing with the pricing of coal in a way that supports affordable electricity pricing. And we've made that point before. So, Chair, these are some of the areas in terms of strategic implications we will be engaging with stakeholders as well as government as our shareholder. Chair, I now turn to Eskom response and what we're trying to do with everything I've just discussed and, you know, where we find ourselves. I think the first issue, Chair, then, and you know, our Minister has spoken about this, I think our Chief Executive has spoken about this, is even in our application, we acknowledged, we said, we have a global economic crisis. You have the economic situation in South Africa being what it is. You have the issue around jobs and the need to focus on jobs. So even in submitting our application to start with, we recognized the critical need to balance what we need with the impact on the economy, with the impact on the country, and we accept there's a need to do that, there's a need to phase, there's a need to get to a sensible end. In similar vein, Chair, when we got the NERSA decision, that has been our approach, to say, let's look at it, let's see how we can solve the problem before we become part of the problem. That's been our attitude in terms of how do we now make this work for us. And as I said earlier, Chair, had the decision been phased differently, I think we would have had a huge problem on our hands. But because we have the space of at least the first and the second year, it gives us a chance to engage with stakeholders, it gives us a chance to engage with government to try and find an appropriate solution. Some of the things, Chair, and I'll talk about it in a minute as we go through it, talks about more efficiency, reshaping the business. Saying that's very easy. Doing some of these things, actually finding the savings, actually understanding the implications of things that you won't do is extremely, extremely difficult. And we are concerned that what you don't want is unintended consequences. So you try and cut costs somewhere, and without thinking through it carefully, you realize you've got a huge, bigger implication for operations or for something else, somewhere else in the business. So we want to make sure that as we move forward, we create what is a sustainable platform to build on and just not try and cut costs in an irresponsible manner. So, Chair, some of the additional developments since the application was submitted, there were further determinations made by the Minister in December, and that was just after the application was submitted. Also, certain determinations were rephased. There's talk of the RP being updated in this year, Chair. There's been no allocation of new capacity beyond Kusile, aside from the determinations I've spoken about. And as I indicated earlier, the discussion around the country pact for pricing of coal has commenced, and government has made significant steps to try and address this challenge together with the industry and Eskom. Chair, for the last financial year, and I can't talk too much about the results for the last financial year because we will be releasing our results within the next month or two, so I don't want to talk about the details, but generally just to mention that we have closed in a slightly stronger financial position, so that is a positive. And with regard to the 30 billion rand cost reduction commitment we made in MYPD3, we've gone a long way to start identifying how we're going to go about achieving those savings. On the operational side, Chair, we've put in place certain strategies to make sure that our plant is sustainable over a period, and you'll recall that we have been indicating for a while now that we don't have enough space to do maintenance. We've had a review of our operations. We are concerned that certain design or philosophy maintenance must be given a priority, and we've got a strategy which is called the 80-10-10. So 80% availability, 10% planned capability loss or planned maintenance, and limit unplanned to a maximum of 10%. And in that way, we believe over a 5-year period, we can start clawing back at getting our plant back to better levels of sustainability over the longer period. Chair, then the next issue under the operational, and it's part of the reshaping that I've been talking about, there's in principle agreement at board that to the extent that additional resources are needed in core operations in critical areas of the business, we may need to look creatively at how you move people around, how you get the resources to where it's needed. We have, Chair, together with our shareholder ministry, a intergovernment work group that has been looking at the medium-term constraints. They will also look at the implications of some of these things we're talking about. We will also raise options in terms of what alternatives there are in terms of different support, and through this team we'll try and engage and make sure that the minister is aware of some of the thinking around what is possible. Chair, and then lastly, we have started to engage NERSA on the decision with regard to the issues I've tried to sketch in terms of some of the benchmarks they've used, some of the assumptions they've used, and basically to try and get us on a footing where we can get clarity on how the rules will apply, so that if our board takes decisions today around certain expenditure, that they won't be regarded as reckless, because we would have certain clarity from NERSA around how certain costs will be treated and how certain expenditure will be treated. So, Chair, if I go to the next slide, effectively what this tries to demonstrate is, in responding then to the NERSA decision, I spoke earlier about Eskom adopted an approach that we needed to look holistically at this in an integrated fashion, and that's why we talk about the integrated delivery program. As I summarized at the beginning of the presentation, Chair, we will look, the one part of this program is to look at our generation sustainability, the plant, making sure we have space to do the maintenance, to do all the critical operations, and not use financial issues to avoid doing what is necessary and what is right. The second part of the program, Chair, is making sure that we can deliver on our mandate in terms of the current board program. So Madibi, Kusile, Inkula, we need to make sure that happens. Then the third leg is really what we're talking about. It's about how do we look at building from where we are in terms of we've committed efficiencies of 30 billion, what further efficiencies can we find? How do we reshape the business to improve productivity, to work better? What will we stop doing? What can we use in terms of the business model that needs to change? We need to raise those issues with our shareholders, government, and see if that's possible. We need to engage all stakeholders in terms of things and assistance we may need. For example, energy conservation scheme, the things we're already doing around help us beat the peak. We need stakeholders to assist in managing the system over the period. And lastly, the point I've made about going to NERSA and saying, look, you've made your decision, there's a regulatory framework in place, but can we engage with you in getting clarity in terms of how the rules will be applied to certain specific instances, which will give us better flexibility to be able to take decisions that we know are secure in terms of building a future and putting us on a sustainable path. So, Chair, if you look at the next slide, it's a very busy slide, but I'll try and just talk you through it. It's just trying to expand on what I've shown. This is not a sequential slide. It doesn't say this is what we're going to do in sequence. It is also not a slide that says we have decided this is what we're going to do. All we're trying to do, Chair, and what I'm trying to share is, in trying to achieve this integrated delivery program, is I'm trying to give the committee and the honourable members a sense of how we're going about our thinking and the fact that we are trying to think as broadly as possible and looking at all of the options that are possible. The next steps in this process will be, once we've identified what is possible, what we think is doable, is obviously then to engage with stakeholders, to engage with our shareholders, and then agree on that being an appropriate topic. So, Chair, if you look at the first one, the efficiency I've spoken about, we've already identified the 30 billion. We will continue to find more and more efficiencies as we go along. The second one is the regulatory clearing account that I spoke about. And in essence, it's getting clarity with NERSA about certain key things, and it's on the next slide. I'll just show you what we mean by getting clarity with NERSA on the clearing account mechanism. I must point out, Chair, that the regulated clearing account has got specific limitations. It is a rule one mechanism within the regulatory framework. It's not a panacea that will solve all of our problems. But given where we are, we're saying it's an option we must explore before, you know, taking a responsible decision. So it's certainly something we must look at. The issue of ESCOM's mandate, which I raised this, it's about talking about what is our role in IDM, what do we do about capacity beyond procedure, and it will need engagement with the shareholder and other stakeholders. The reshaping the business is, again, one of the key things that the integrated delivery program will deliver. What we have done in ESCOM, Chair, is we've taken a senior executive, we've given that executive responsibility to drive this part of the program. That person would have a dedicated project team and to then look at this almost on a full-time basis. So it's not sort of a part-time that people just talk about it when they have the time. We have put a dedicated team behind this with clear deliverables, clear milestones, a budget, all the assistance they need to really look closely at what are the opportunities, and having found opportunities, what are the implications of the opportunities we find as we reshape the business. Because of paramount importance for EXCO and the board is that we don't just cut in an irresponsible manner and find that you're making the business unsustainable. So we've already established some rules. So for example, we will not be cutting in maintenance and operations and things that are necessary to ensure security of supply. It's about how do you look at the other areas and see how much we need to do with what we've got. Chair, then once that is done and we can have a good picture of the business, we'll know what our funding needs are, and then we can explore different funding options. And after that, we can then talk about what capital expenditure do we have based on the funding we have, based on everything and all of the initiatives that we've put in place. And after all of that, as I said, and some of this is in parallel at, you know, at the point I made, it's not sequential, is to talk about additional stakeholder support, additional shareholder support. I mentioned a few times the issue of the energy conservation scheme. I've mentioned the issue around coal prices and how we deal with coal prices to assist. And then lastly, Chair, is once we've got a clear idea as to what we want to do, hopefully within the next year or so, it's about executing and implementing that reshaping or business productivity program efficiently, effectively, and in doing that to maintain the morale of our staff and to make sure that we have energy and enthusiasm around walking that road with us. So Chair, you know, the point I made earlier, it's easy to say this on a slide. We've started some of the discussions internally to try and find some of these things, to try and do some of these things. It is extremely, extremely difficult. It is an enormous task to find. You know, there's obviously the low-hanging fruit, and, you know, because of the 30 billion rand program, we really got the low-hanging fruit. There's a little more you can do beyond that, that's easy. It's around now what next beyond that that is really challenging, and that's why we've got this program manager in place, and that person must go and challenge every area of the business and make sure that everything we want to do is absolutely necessary, and it's necessary now. Because some of the creative things we can talk about is maybe you don't do it all now, you do it some later, you rephase, you do it differently. If you wanted to do something with 100 rand, can you do less for 50 rand? What will be the implication of that? So it's that kind of deep thinking around what needs to be done. Chair, then, some of the key issues to clarify with NERSA, and it flows from what I've tried to explain in how they've taken their decisions. So, Chair, the first issue we would like to talk to NERSA about is the application of the regulated clearing account. In particular, there are two issues that worry us. Firstly, as the rules stand at the moment, it says they will only correct for under expenditure. Now, clearly that is a mistake. The previous rules were for over expenditure and under expenditure. We've raised it with them and they did say it's an oversight. That's not what the rules should provide. But it's the kind of thing where we want to get confirmation from NASA, so when the board takes decisions, we know the rules of the game, so you're not later found to be reckless because you made an assumption, which is, you know, based on no fact. So that's one example of things we want to bed down with NASA. Currently they have a process, Chair, when they use the regulated clearing account, it's based on audited financial statements. So if we forecast we're going to spend 100 rand and the actual comes to 110 rand, the first thing NASA needs to do is a prudency test to say, was it efficient? Should you have incurred 110, or were you inefficient? If they're happy that, you know, you're efficient, you know, I'm happy with everything, so 110 is the number. The way the RCA works for certain buckets, and I'm oversimplifying, honorable members, so it's a little bit more complicated than that. They would then have to give us back the 10 rand additional amount we spent. And the way it works at the moment, because it audited financial statements, at the end of this year, we will only have our audited financial statements for this financial year in the middle of next year. So only in the middle of next year would NASA be able to adjudicate on it. And only in the following year, so in other words, 2 years' time, can they say, okay, yeah, you know, you've spent more, we're actually allowing you that additional expenditure. So we want to talk to them about a more effective way of dealing with the timing. Now, in a normal situation, with normal rules, if it wasn't so drastic, we understand that the rules could work and you could survive. But given where we are concerned that, you know, the two-year lag could create a problem. Chair, based on the picture I showed you, you see you've got those phasings. And as soon as you start going to year two, three, the tsunami starts rolling, and that's when your bigger problem starts to come. Chair, in certain areas, we want to engage them around, you know, for example, the line cost issue I gave you an example of. We want to say to them, if we can demonstrate to you that actually 2 rand is the number with everything we've tried, will you look at it again? You know, that's the kind of discussion we want to have. On the benchmarks, we have said to NASA that why don't we look at a process for getting new benchmarks? Show us the benchmarks you've used, because our benchmarks are different. And let's see if we can get different benchmarks and align closer to what is actually efficient costs rather than just use benchmarks that we don't understand. So, the other one is, as NASA approves capital expenditure in terms of our program, the 337 billion rand, they've cut that to 206 billion. But it's based on project we've put into our application. And in order to manage the next 2 years, we've asked for flexibility to be able to move some of the costs around between projects. And, you know, we'll see what NASA says about that. Some of the differences, Chair, on the return and depreciation flows from NASA putting a value to the base, to the asset base, without inflationary increases. And what we are talking about is an appropriate revaluation, so you take into account in inflation. So, in a nutshell, Chair, we've tried to, as one lever to address the problems we find ourselves in, is to look at the regulatory rules and see how they can work for us. It's not about special favors. It's around just getting clarity and upfront agreeing how the rules will work. In our first engagement, we haven't discussed the detail with NASA, but in principle, they've been supportive of the idea, because in any event, this is how the rules normally work. All we're trying to do is get clarity in advance so that we don't have surprises at the end of the period and have debates at the end of the period. We'd rather have it now and say, if this happens, how will you treat it, and get a view now so it can actually inform our decisions proactively rather than do what we want and have a debate about whether it fits within the rules or not. And Chair, lastly then, with that, the next steps and the priority for us is, because of the way the decision is phased, we have focused our efforts in terms of the first two-year window and then the next three-year window. So there's a lot we want to achieve in the two-year window, and then there'll be longer-term issues we need to address in the next three-year window. So step one and priority one for us is to stabilize the business and to roll out the productivity I'm talking about, identify the issues around reshaping, and make sure we're in a position to implement and execute these things as quickly as possible. We're hoping we can achieve a country pact on the coal prices, as I've mentioned. We certainly see the capacity expansion program as one of the key priorities for the country, and we're committing to deliver on that. Chair, the 2 points 4 and 5 is around the RCA mechanism that I'm talking about, is determine what can be recovered and try and engage with NERSA around clarifying the rules of the game so that we can deal with issues prospectively and proactively rather than dispute interpretation after the fact. There's certain issues to confirm with our shareholder and stakeholders around additional capacity beyond Kusile. To the issue around shareholder stakeholder support is what we will explore as well in parallel. And once we have all of that done is to confirm a list of projects for the next 5 years, which will then be aligned to our capital expenditure program, and then there will be transparency and clear visibility as to what it is we will deliver over the 5-year period in the light of the NERSA decision. So, Chair, thank you very much, and in summary, and in a nutshell, that's our storage.
Yeah, thanks very much, Mr. Mohammed. It looks things are very difficult between you and NERSA. Yeah, but members, you have listened to the presentation by ESCOM. I will now open this opportunity for questions, for clarification. Honorable Mabitja, Honorable Mlenzana, Honorable O'Neill, Groenewald, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's just unfortunate that money is the root of all evil. And we all need it, personally and otherwise. So therefore, I have this question for clarity. Last year, ESCOM identified a funding gap of 190 billion rand over 7 years. The 8% tariff increase by NERSA created a 225 billion. If you can just clarify, if this 225 billion will be an addition to the already existing 190 billion funding gap. Thank you.
Another one,
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me start by writing on your comment. This, Chairperson, is not a very easy meeting. It demands some kind of balance, particularly from ourselves. It would have been better if NERSA was here. Yes, Chair, because we would then be able to try to locate some element of objectivity. It's unfortunate, Chair, because we are now we are smelling elections. I wonder if we would have that opportunity, but if time allows, I wish that that be created, because also, Chair, we should avoid a situation where our names are written in bold as the ones who, in this year and day, did not intervene. Because ESCOM would say one day, we briefed the select committee and nothing happened, which is very unfortunate. I'm raising this, Chair, in a very, very painful kind of a situation, because honestly, there is nothing much that we can do as of now. We would just now be asking clarity-seeking questions as the whip of the committee, you know, has looked into, because we don't want to be trapped into a situation where we see ourselves siding either with NERSA or with ESCO. But at the same time, we have a responsibility to, with time, adjudicate a chairperson, even if it goes to in a situation where we ask for a session with the two ministers concerned. But I'm just adding on your comment, Chair. This is deeper than one just expected. Chair, NERSA's determination comes at a time when ESCOM faces other challenges. The ESCOM's built program, is running 2 years behind time, with significant cost overruns, of course. You have just been mentioning now further challenges, like though you were not specific, like in the Medupi site, there's ongoing labor unrest, there's violence, destruction of vehicles, and all that. Now, Chair, in the light of all this, is it likely that the first generator unit at Medupi is scheduled to come online late 2013 will be delayed? If then that happens, what will the consequences of the delay be, both financially and in terms of possible load shedding? One should avoid a situation where all this lands up into a situation where we see load shedding coming back to the country. The second one, Chair, would be a straightforward question, if there's anything like that. It's just precise. Are the Medupi, Ingula, and Kusile plants fully funded? We just have to be clarified as far as that is concerned. I'm talking the now, the present tense, Chairperson. What I listened there. There's a lot which, with time, is going to be loaded on the shoulders of government as shareholder. Now, one would like to know, what is the likelihood of ESCOM needing further debt guarantees from the government? Then lastly, how will the lower revenue allocation to capital programs in the NYPD3 affect the rollout of transmission and distribution networks? Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you, Chair, very much. Also for the presentation from ESCOM. Although ESCOM has presented a very bleeding picture for us here today, in terms of the two, it seems to me ESCOM and NERSA don't read out of the same book. Or is the situation where you've asked two lawyers to give you an interpretation about a word and they give you different interpretation? Same lawyers, the same word. Because, Chairperson, really, it seems to me that the information, in terms of the information which ESCOM is giving us, it sort of disputes the information of NERSA. Because NERSA also raised issues of capacity in ESCOM, which I extract from the presentation. And ESCOM disputed that, based on the fact that NERSA said we're only going to be able to generate 60 billion rand as a revenue or returns. And then ESCOM said that, and NERSA said, no, we're going to generate less than that. I want to follow my argument. So clearly the focus here is around the capacity of ESCOM as an institution, which is raised here by NERSA. Point of clarity, Chairperson, which I want to know is that the presenter also alluded to the fact that they wanted, or they're suggesting that the coal be declared a strategic source. Is that to regulate the price? Solely, and what is your stakeholders' view on it? in relation of the of the shareholder, is are you anticipating any guarantees from the shareholder in the future coming? I'm using guarantees. I don't want to use bailouts. It's a very on the eye,
yeah.
On the ear, actually. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. From my side, also thank you for the presentation. And I think there's already a lot to say about the differences between NERSA and ESCOM. But I want to make some statements, and I want also you to react on these statements. And the first one is ESCOM failed to ensure energy security in South Africa. And then with that, the monopoly ESCOM have in the past and maybe at this stage to stranglehold the energy generation in South Africa. So for a long time, ESCOM have a monopoly, and what is the future regarding that? Are you going to privatize other companies in this area, and how are you going to see that we can have, maybe we can reduce the prices when we have that. Nuclear, maybe we must do a proper study again into nuclear. It is very expensive to put this plants there, but on the long term, it is. I think it is cheaper than coal. And in the pipeline, you have a fleet of 6 nuclear power stations in South Africa to be built. And I want to know where the places are and how far are you with this at this stage. Then the South Africa Integrated Resource Plan, the IRP, must look also. We must also look into it again. That's a 20-year plan into the future. And maybe that could also lead to that we build stations which is not necessary at this stage, especially coal stations and nuclear at a great cost. We need energy, and then we need energy security to have quality health services, education, economic growth, and job creation. And therefore, it is, from my point of view, Chair, it is very important that the discussions between you and NERSA is continuing, and that must be an ongoing process to see how can we resolve the problem at the end of the day. And then what about alternatives? There's a lot of alternatives we can think of. There's gas, there's wind, there's ocean, hydroelectricity. What about the Kabora-Bassa? And how many electricity are we exported to our neighbor countries? And that is not a problem, but I know some of the people already said to import electricity from Kabora-Bassa is a problem, but it's not a problem to export it. So I can't understand it, why to export is not a problem, but to import is a problem. And what is the problem there? The other problem is the big bonuses in the company to our top management. That is billions of rands at the end of the day, I think, and we can save a lot of money there. That's not necessary to pay people that kind of money. We paid our top management. I believe each and every one of us can survive on a very, very low salary and bonuses if what these people get. Unions also play a big role, and I'm really worried about the unions. What we saw now at Medupi again, that is weeks of delaying. What role do ESCOM play in this regard? Why can't we afford it? Get in conversations with the unions before time, before they strike, and then that there's a delay each and every time, and that costs South Africa and the taxpayers in South Africa millions of rand at the end of the day. I think we can resolve these problems before time. And then Chairperson, what about on legal connections all over South Africa? Cable theft. What are Eskom doing about that? That's also millions of rands is going down the drain. And I think if we do something about that, we can also save a lot of money there. And then my last question, now, Chairperson, I can't read what I write here. I will leave it.
Hey, comrades, I'm on that.
Thanks, Honorable Honorable
Zulu,
can you switch off the mic?
Well, thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, we make our job easy if we to invite Nelsa also one meeting in Eskom, because if posing the question in the Eskom, the absence of Nelsa, I think is very unfair decision for practice to do that. I think we must invite two guys, even due to recess time, we should invite them to come here to talk about this decision.
Thank you. Honorable
Dow?
I'm fine for now, Chair.
Okay. Jacob?
You're well represented.
Yeah.
No.
Our comrades.
Yeah,
Chair. I just want to find out from Eskom. They have applied for a trillion, which was slashed to 862. Was it real, or it was a bargaining tactic like in unions, whereby they'll put their price high and they know that this is what they want? I just want to check on that. And secondly, it's about that plan. I don't know. To me, it's academic. I don't know whether it will be achievable. Because here, there are no even time frames. Because if you have a plan, you also have to have your program of action with time frames. So as it is, to me, it is academic. Can we get meat out of the bone? Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Shibande? Okay, Honorable Onet?
Thank you, Chairperson. The very important one, which I forgotten, Chairperson, which I wanted to ask, is that this morning in Radio 2000, the Kryptonians were prepared for power cuts in the peak of the winter. Can Eskom, I'm glad the spokesperson is here as well, can Eskom guarantee the public outside there today here? Because the minister is very consistent saying that there will be no power cuts. But I was surprised this morning that the city of Cape Town actually alerted the citizens of Cape Town that there is going to be power cut during the peak in of the winter. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know if Eskom do monitor the entrepreneurship central service providers, because there's a distributed cancer concerning this all over South Africa. In the amount of tenders are being inflated, and you find that the big chunk of the money that is supposed to be used for the money that you want now is going to individuals. So are you monitoring that? Because this is a big concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's hope even if
Why I say that again is because I see here Medupi is running about 8 months behind because of workmanship, poor workmanship, which means that these people who are working there, they are contractors who have been paid money and they are doing shoddy work, and the project is running 8 months behind. And labor unrest, what's the cause of that? Those service providers are not treating or giving those laborers what is due to them. And what are you doing about that?
Thank you, Honorable Mabija. Early this year in our strategic planning meeting, the DG told us that there is the bill currently underway. And he said that this bill requires ESCOM to release some of its assets for the establishment of ISMO, and implied that this will have a negative impact on ESCOM's balance sheet. How well prepared is ESCOM to deal with these challenges, and especially in ensuring that that this company will fulfill its mandate of keeping the lights on? And let's hope with all this we will have the lights on this winter. For example, Sunday when we were at the airport, people were saying in Joburg there were no lights. So can you give us the responses and assure us that there will be the light, we will have light all over, even in the rural areas?
Yeah.
Even the rural areas, where if you start in Joburg, that means the rural areas will follow and it's going to be worse. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I'll try and go through as many of the questions as I can deal with. Just in terms of a logical flow.
Let me see what the members have said so that we can be able to find out where the issue is.
Yeah.
We will have to, as a matter of agency, have NERSA and ESCOM together so that we understand what's happening.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try and deal with that issue as well. Chair, if I can just start with one of the later comments about we asked for 16 and was it just sort of a bargaining mechanism, the first opening negotiating bid. Chair, firstly, it very definitely was not, because had we applied the rules as they existed at the time, strictly as they required, you would have found that the number would have been higher than 16. But more importantly, Chair, for the last year of MYPD2, we were entitled to an increase of 25%. And in aligning with our shareholder, in discussions with our shareholder, we went to NERSA and said, you know, we think we can manage with a lower number given where the economy is. So let's reduce the 25 to 16. Chair, it doesn't make sense to have done that and the next year then try and bargain. We should have just then stuck with the 25. So I'm saying, as a sign of good faith at least, that we would genuinely saw a problem in the economy and were happy to compromise on what we were entitled to, because had we not done anything, we would have been entitled to that 25% without a problem. So it doesn't make sense to give the 1 year, you know, from 25 to 16, and the very next year say we believe we should only get 10, but let's ask for 16. So that wasn't what informed what we did. So if I can then go to the NERSA issue and the concerns raised by my members, I think the point I'm really making and the starting point of the message is, if we went for 16 and get half of what we asked for, it can't be something that's going to be difficult for us to resolve. And the message that I really wanted to convey to the honorable members is we are taking a responsible approach to work with stakeholders, including NERSA, to solve the problem in a constructive way. And that's the key message, is to say we are trying to bed down to say, how do we solve this together? We are not trying to get into a dispute about who's right or wrong about the numbers. Where that becomes relevant, Chen, what I'm getting to is, as we engage with NERSA and find ways, we want to raise some of the issues and say to NERSA, would you be happy that we try and relook some of these things to get us on a proper footing? Now, Chief NERSA were here today, they would say a few things which they've said in their reasons already. They would say, Eskom, we believe you're not as efficient as you can be, you must be more efficient. They'll say, you know, the line costs we give you, we think you must build within those line costs. So my idea here wasn't to say, all I was trying to share is, as Eskom we have a view, NERSA will have a view, and I don't think any process is going to get us to agree. In fact, in our early engagements with NERSA, we've agreed to disagree. But we've both said, let's work towards a common end. These are projections and forecasts into the future. We don't know if you're right or you don't know if we're right. Let's find some other benchmark that can give us more guidance. And that's the approach we're following. So I think it's a reflection of a good, vibrant democracy where it's their view, it's an opinion. It's saying, what do I think is going to happen to demand over the next 5 years? Here's all my studies, and this is what I think is going to happen. Eskom, what do you think is going to happen? I'm just giving an example. They actually agree on the forecast. But it's around, what do we think is going to happen to build costs? What do we think is going to happen? How much maintenance can we do for the next year, 2 years, 3 years? We believe we can do 65 billion a year. They say, but in the past you've only done 50. We don't think you can do 65. So it's a different opinion about forecasts and assumptions. And that's what I'm trying to get at. So we could sit with NERSA and they've already told us, no, we think you in these areas you can do better. And that's their role. They need to push us. But what I'm getting to is some areas where they're saying, but we used a benchmark. We want to say, let's talk about the benchmark. Let's see if we can get another benchmark that can change our minds. And another benchmark will achieve what the committee is hoping we achieve. That maybe it will get a different number that both parties can look at. So if we say it's 100, NERSA says it should be 50, maybe we get a benchmark that says it's 80, and NERSA says, okay, I believe that. We say, well, we believe that. That's what we're trying to do in solving the problem. Okay. So, Che, in terms of NERSA and the role, as I said, in their reasons, they've been very strong about how they see things unfolding and what they believe is appropriate or not. So, you know, another example, they say IDM, Eskom, you don't do it, another government agency must do it. We're saying, but NERSA, we need it in the next 2 years. They're saying, well, government will do it. So it's completely different views. There's no right or wrong in that one. Our concern is just, if it doesn't happen, you're going to have a problem. So, Chair, I think the issues around our view on NERSA's reasons must be seen in that context, knowing full well that they're saying something different. And I don't think it's the kind of issue where you put us in a room together and say, now agree that that is the right thing. You won't get us to that point. Our way of achieving what the committee is trying to achieve is say, will you consider getting a new benchmark on that issue? And if NERSA says yes, we'll say, what's the process? Who's the person? Now we get a new benchmark and we can say, okay, one of us is wrong or right in relation to what the new answer is. So that's really the kind of approach we want to follow, which is a constructive one to try and yield positive outputs, rather than arguing who's right or wrong. Because our view is a debate now with NERSA as to who's right or wrong is unproductive. It doesn't take us forward in solving the problems. The issue of the funding gap, the gap we show now is all inclusive. So it's not 225 plus the 190. We had a while ago said we've managed to close the 190 funding gap. So the gap of 225 we show is the total gap. So the issue around the committee and I'll speak to the issue around the detail around the plan and the committee not being seen as intervening. What we have said, Chair, to many stakeholders, and a number of the portfolio committees wanted us to come even sooner. What we've tried to explain is, if you look at the task ahead of us, and if we want to do it in a sensible way, it takes a lot of work. And the reason we needed some time is then we can come with more definitive answers. So the Honourable Member is correct. If this is all there is, then you're not going to get anywhere. But the manager who's been appointed to lead this integrated delivery program is at the moment developing a very detailed project plan with milestones as to when things will be done, what will be explored, how they're going to go about doing this. So that plan is being developed as we speak. Some of the other questions that are being raised, for example, will we need more guarantees? Will we go to government? What type of support? As we go through the processes, Chair, that I've tried to sketch to say we're going to look internally, look at our 30 billion, look at more efficiencies, see how we can reshape the business. All of that will get us to a point that says, right, now here's a problem or there isn't a problem. Based on that problem, are there funding options? What will the rating agencies do about what they see? How much money will we as Eskom still be able to borrow on the capital markets? Once we know all of that, we'll then be in a position to say, well, you know, we're going to have to go to government to ask for more support. It may need a guarantee of this much. We're not there yet because we're going through all of those processes to get to that answer. And as I said earlier, it's not a simple thing. If we use the example of the question that was asked about, well, will transmission rollout of lines suffer? Part of the re-engineering and the reshaping is saying, if we've got this pot of money, let's identify our key priorities. So if that transmission corridor is a key priority, that's where we will allocate money first. So those areas will not suffer. Now let's understand what we can't do. And we're hoping that in that process, you can secure safety issues, you can secure critical operations, you can secure critical infrastructure construction, and then the areas that may need to suffer are issues that we'll need to look at and say, can we rephase? What is the minimal impact of this on the business? We are confident we'll be able to do that. When we come to the end and have all the information, if there's still a problem, that's the time we will certainly engage our shareholder, we will engage all stakeholders. So, Chair, I do appreciate the Honourable Member's approach to this by saying, if you bring a problem to us, we can't just listen to you and let you go. You know, if we see something looming, we have a responsibility to actually see how we can help solve it. But all I'm saying to the Honourable Members is, at the moment we're showing you the first sort of phase of where we are, what our thinking is, what our processes are. So we haven't shown you enough because we don't have the full picture yet. And when we have a better view of the full picture, we can certainly then start sharing more. And then you will know if there's a critical issue that as a country we need to respond to or not. So, you know, that's where we are in the phases of this process. Chair, with regard to the other challenges that were raised around the build and whether the units will be delayed, we've said publicly on the build, Chair, that we committed to meeting the deadlines we've set for ourselves. You know, the issues of labour, all of that have been highlighted as risks. The one point I want to make, Chair, is that, as we said, the next 2 years there's no issue with funding. So you will not have delays to the current build program because of the MYPD decision in the next 2 years. So while we're solving the problems, we're saying, you know, we are not saying at the moment we're not building or there's a problem. We're going to make sure that what we need to do in terms of build will happen because we have the two-year window. If there is a problem, say, we will certainly engage stakeholders, everyone. But for now, we are not saying that because of the MYPD3 decision, the build program is going to stop. Okay, so the funding that has been available for the build program has been in place. Chair, I think I responded to the issue of the transmission networks, and it's about, as soon as we go through the process to prioritize, why this process requires such in-depth thinking is to address the question raised by the Honourable Member, so that when you do need to reshape, you've actually prioritised things very well, so that critical issues do not suffer.
Okay. In terms of coal being declared a strategic resource, Chair, our purpose was twofold. The first was to motivate to government that coal be dedicated in the first instance for energy and power supply in South Africa. So not necessarily for Eskom, but that it be dedicated for power and energy supply in South Africa. The second component of that is the pricing part, because we're seeing problems in terms of how we can manage the prices in terms of the selling price. So that's the reason we want coal declared a strategic resource. Chair, I think I've dealt with the issue of the guarantees, and all I'm saying is right now we want to go through the cascading problem solving before we know what's left to be solved at the end. And if you look at the slide I've showed, once you've exhausted all of that, you'll see at the end, is there still a gap, or has the gap been solved? Chair, then there's a number of issues raised around policy matters about failing to ensure energy security, the issue of privatization, the issue of independent power producers. Chair, a lot of these things are in the domain of the policy ministry, and I suppose in terms of our shareholders. So, you know, the RP is being reviewed by the Department of Energy for the very reason that we don't want to build unnecessary power and make sure that it's kept current as we have a plan for the country. But any other questions about nuclear, the options, all of that, I think it's a policy matter that the DOE will need to deal with. Certainly in terms of alternatives, gas, wind, all of those, I think, fit into the RP. And it's not Eskom that determines the generation options, it's the RP that does. And the IRP through and the DOE minister determines whether Eskom will build or private party. So those are all policy matters, I think, within the domain of DOE. The principle that we should ensure that as a country we have a credible, relevant, up-to-date plan certainly is accepted, and I think that's what DOE is trying to ensure that we do. Chair, with regard to the labor and trade unions, with regard to some of the major contracts, it's complicated contracting where you're contracting on big packages, on huge tenders with your suppliers, and we need to be able to hold them to account. And the way we contracted is that they subcontract to other parties, and the way we try to influence how they deal with labor is to what is called the project labor agreement. So those parties enter into agreements with their employees, and we try and push and make sure that what is in those agreements is actually reasonable and acceptable and so on. It is in those processes and in managing their staff that I think we've had some of these problems emerge. Now, whatever is the right or wrong way to do this, as a result of that, you've seen that the ministers intervened, we've intervened. So we have become closer to the issues. The contractors, together with Labour, are renegotiating the PLA, the Project Labour Agreement, into what is called a partnership agreement, and Eskom is very much more involved in that. You know, it has been reported that we've sent Paulo Flati, our FD, to the site, and he's also getting a lot closer to these things. So yes, we need to be closer, we need to be more proactive, but there is a limitation in that you don't want to go so far that you absolve the contractors of all of their liabilities so they can turn around with every problem and say, sorry, it's not our fault, Eskom, it's your fault. Because from a contractual point of view, we'll get ourselves in a bind if we're not careful how we do that. But the point is taken, Honourable Member, that we need to get closer to this. We need to try and see how best we can assist in solving it, how best we can assist in encouraging good labour practices across all of the sites. So, yeah, certainly is a factor that we're looking at. The issue around illegal connections, cable theft, Chair, this is a huge, huge problem for us. We have dedicated teams, focus area, especially with the cable theft. We've seen some good progress in that. Cable theft has been coming down recently, not just for us, but generally in the economy, and I think SACI has released some statistics about that, but it remains a problem. We are trying everything. We have patrols, we work with industry associations, we've worked through government with the legislation, we've dealt with the scrap, selling of scrap material legislation, we've looked at marking our copper cable, so we're trying to put as much as possible, the effort we can together with the industry in resolving this, because not only is it a financial issue, if you think about what happened in Gauteng recently, I mean, the suburb without power for 4 or 5 days, and the problem was thermal cable. So Che, it's not just a financial issue, it's a security supply issue. We agree with you, we should do whatever we can to, deal with it, but it is a problem. But there's good progress, the energy associations are working, the industry associations are working, we've got good relationships with the police, our internal security, South African Police Services, the industry, are starting to work much better together. The intelligence is improving, and you've seen the benefits of some of that, and some of it come down. It's still high, but the trend was coming down. Illegal connections, Chair, just as problematic. We have a huge problem. We've tried to develop different strategies around smart metering, tamper-proof metering, and you have difficulties in some communities where we can't even get access to do disconnections. We can't even get access to put in new meters. So again, it's a difficult one. We're trying. We've got various campaigns through Operation Kanyisa, all of that to try and move and move forward with this. In some of the areas, like if you look at the big areas, there's again calls for debt write-offs and some sort of solution to the problem where if we can engage the community in some sort of agreement, we can then move forward. So, we're looking at all of those initiatives. Chair, the issue of bonuses, let me start with saying, we all agree that no one should be paid excessively. We all agree that whatever you paid for should be fair salary, that's market related, that you can be proud to say, I've earned this money because I work hard and I deserve it. So, those principles are clear. I think the issue is just then how you apply that. I know there will be guidelines coming out from our minister around executive remuneration. In Eskom, you have bonuses that are paid across the board. It's not just for executives. It's right down to all of the employees. And I think the key issue is, is what you're paying people fair remuneration, whatever you call it. And that's our challenge. At Eskom, I think we do pay people well. We pay a decent wage. We need to attract good quality people, and we believe that's what we do. Chair, the issue of Cape Town issuing a statement about power cuts, I'm not sure about. I don't know about the issue. What I do know is we had a similar concern in Gauteng when City Power issued load shedding schedules. And they explained after the fact that there was no load shedding coming. They were just issuing this because we've learned from 2008 we must be ready, we must have all the contingencies in place. So they were just updating their schedules and making sure it's in place. And they had to calm everyone down saying they have not said that there'll be load shedding, they were just issuing the schedule. I can't comment on the Cape Town issue, Chair. I don't know what the situation there is. On the state of the system, Chair.
I think you can find out for us and then we'll get that to respond.
We can try, Chair. It won't be Eskom, it will be the Cape Town City, but we can try and find out for you. Chair, we've been saying generally, the Chief Executive has been saying that we are committed to keeping the lights on, but as Eskom, we cannot do it on our own. We're going to need stakeholders to participate. We've spoken about the campaign around Beat the Peak. We've been communicating as to what help we need from residential customers, from stakeholders in terms of, switching off geysers, pool pumps, non-essential lighting between 5 and 9 p.m. So, Chair, as we've said before, we are committed to keeping the lights on, but we cannot do it on our own. We're going to need all stakeholders to help. We are better prepared. We have contingencies in place. We've asked for certain safety nets like the energy conservation scheme, and we're hoping things like that can be promulgated and put in place because we do need the contingencies, we need the safety net. So we're well prepared, we have contingencies, we're committed to doing it, but Chair, on our own, we will not be able to do it. We need the support of every South African to do this.
Thank you.
Can I just follow up on that, please?
I just want to know how effective is this advertisements on the television, and how are you measuring it to know there is an effect on it? Thank you.
Chair, I'll ask my colleague. Two seconds left. Okay, we can. Okay, we'll deal with that in a minute, Chair. If I can just then finish the other question we have. So the other question was around monitoring our suppliers and tenders, and you know, making sure we get what we ask for. It is a focus area, and generally, we have a whole commercial department that tries to assist with our supply chain, from the tender process to the awarding of the tenders. So at every step, there are things we do to make sure that you are dealing with credible suppliers before you actually award the tender. So there's an evaluation done before someone actually gets onto the shortlist. Once the tender is awarded, then there's also contract management of making sure that we get the quality we should be getting. On the bigger contracts, like the examples you've used, Chair, like Hitachi and the boiler example, I mean, that's slightly different. There is monitoring, there's detailed monitoring. But yes, these things have slipped through. And Chair, generally, I think that we have processes in place, we do this, but I don't think I can say, you know, we've got it 100% perfect. And you know, this is an area that's an ongoing focus. I think we must learn from mistakes we've made in the past and get better and better and better. Because we have, in the past, through what we try and do, Chair, especially with significant tenders, like, you know, these sorts of tenders, is in addition to the normal stage gates and the normal processes, we also then have internal audit review the whole process before we award some of the bigger tenders. So they would do things like check probity checks, they would look at the capability of the tenderer, they would look at BEE credentials that is actually valid and not falsified, they would look at capability of the organization, you know, those sorts of things. So we're very, very aware that this is an area that if we don't monitor well, you can lose a lot of money, and we are trying, you know, to make sure we have good processes, good monitoring, and try and actually get what we need to. Once the projects are entered into, and more the smaller ones than the larger ones, I think the larger ones are monitored more closely. Sometimes with the smaller ones, as I said, Chair, there are processes in place, and I wouldn't say we are perfect, so there would be slip-ups here and there, but that is on our radar and something we must get better at, definitely. Chair, then the last issue was the issue around ISMO. On ISMO, our submission to Parliament was if the government policy was that we need to move to a more competitive environment and we need to start, you know, progressively moving in that direction, our proposal was that we move in phases so that you can create, you know, ISMO has different components, so you can create the market operator for a start, then you can add to it different functions as you believe appropriate, and we were also clear that our view around a separate state entity, that we should look at that in a phased approach, because especially for the next 2 to 3 years, we were very worried that from a security of supply perspective, you don't want to be managing the system we have with the tight margins we have, and then try and restructure the industry at the same time. So that's the submission we have made to the Portfolio Committee. And I think if you look at the results of the bill, Chair, we're pleased in the sense that it does reflect that approach, in the sense that what the bill does, it says that's what will happen, but the timing will be determined by the Minister as she, you know, deems appropriate. So, Chair, on that, I don't know if one of my colleagues from DPE would want to add anything to that. But I'll ask Hilary to just comment on the
alerts. The power alerts are reasonably effective. We do have a monitoring system in place, and we do get a response of, say, over 300 megawatts to the red. Obviously, it could be better, but that's significant. It's enough to power a sort of a medium-sized city at peak, if you like. So they do have an effect, and we are, in fact, today, yesterday and today, launching a new program called the Power Bulletin, which is very much linked to our Beat the Peak campaign. designed not just to get people to save energy in general, but specifically to get off the grid if they can during peak, particularly between 5 and 7. So you'll start to see on TV, I think the Minister Gigaba was on TV very early this morning announcing it. We'll be sending out media releases and so on later today. It's a bulletin on SABC stations for the moment, which will update people on a daily basis as to where we are that evening, and you know, alert them if they really need to pay attention to beating the peak.
Chair, I think I've covered all the questions. If not, the honourable members can just tell me which I've missed. But in summary, Chair, what we're saying is, what we wanted to share with the committee is, the decision by NERSA has a huge impact for ESCOM. What we've done is step back and said, if we're a responsible corporate citizen in South Africa, we need to think beyond just ESCOM and how do we now try and solve the problem in the best interests of the country. We've got a plan in place that try and helps us get there. The first two-year period gives us some flexibility as to how we can get there. We've tried to share with the committee all of the options we're thinking about, and as we go through all of those, the options, the implications at a detailed level will become clearer. And as soon as that becomes clearer, we will engage with the shareholders. And then we will know, do we need more guarantees or not? How much more funding can we get? What projects will be affected? So that's the cascading process as we go through it. And Chair, in terms of, to the extent that we have different views with NERSA, that's expected. It's always going to be like that. And it's around forecast future, what is efficient, it's natural that we would have different views. I think the approach we're taking, and where, in principle, NERSA has supported us, is how do we work together to find a solution, rather than sparring about who's right and who's wrong.
No, no, thank you very much, Chair. And I think the last comment really brings us back to the meeting. Because, you know, there will always be that temptation once you see ESCOM, and then a whole range of issues would then come up. Probably other things, of course, will be better placed when even we deal with the threat plan broadly now, not only the specific matter. Then we'll also be able then to zoom into those policy matters and so forth. And how then do we get clarity on some of these things. Chair, you know, listening to the presentation, initially I had said to myself, I'm not going to say anything because of the clarity that came through. But on second thought, I didn't realize that where the problem could be or could have been. The extent to which ESCOM went on to explain to the public and to mobilize society behind its application, I think that's where also it created problems. Because you'd remember, even in the presentation, I don't know, you keep on referring to stakeholders, I don't know who are the stakeholders. But I want to believe that the primary stakeholder in this instance would be the South African public. And during the process of the application, you had a rollout program or outreach program, a public participation program. There was an outcry to say the program is elitist. It is not a program that is reaching out to the most affected people. It was there in the remote areas. It did not. It was not placed at venues where ordinary people could access in order to make their presentation. Because I can imagine, if that was the case, the South African public would have had a better understanding of what the challenges that you are faced with. What did I rely on, even as a member of parliament? I relied on newspaper reports, I relied on news reports, I relied on the internet and all those sorts of things, on how what the issues are and so forth. But Now, if you take my younger brother or my cousin sister or my uncle or whoever, does he or she have that similar understanding? No, because the program did not reach up to them. We had an outcry by COSATU as well. And one of the major and central arguments by COSATU was, you are not speaking to the right people. COSATU had also a cry to say that you are not even coming to us as a strategic labor federation in South Africa. Thank you very much, Honorable Groenewald, for raising that issue. Ordinarily, I would have expected you to say the unions are too strong, they are influencing policy too much in the country, but thank a lot that you're raising. So I think that's where the major problem, according to me, lies, because you failed to mobilize the South African people behind your program. Even if it was not behind your objective, but at least to have an understanding of what this is all about. You know, because if you look at what the analysts, energy analysts, were saying in the newspapers and all that, they were happy with the extent to which NASA had treated you, because there was that popular view that you had double-counted your figures, or your figures were not correctly calculated, and all those sorts of things. There is an over-reliance on your investment. What do they call it again? Investment rate and so forth. Your projections or whatsoever were not in line with international standards, because whilst you were at 16 and got 8, but at an international level it is at 3, between 3 and 4. So those kind of things, if there's no clarity that comes out from ESCOM to say, but these are the facts that we're faced with, it would really not be fair to us. And then secondly, Chair, beyond the issue of public participation and the mobilization of the South African people behind the programs of ESCOM, is the question of Medupi and Kusile, particularly when with the labor unrest. I don't want to raise conspiracy theories in this meeting, because my question then is, if these are the challenges that ESCOM is faced with, and you have these key instruments that have been identified being behind schedule as they are, could it be that there is lack of a better word, an element of sabotaging ESCOM's program? I'm raising this at the risk of being accused of being too conspiratorial. But it's a thinking. How do you balance this in your own internal assessment? Do you see it just as a simplistic, labor issue, unrest, and then from there contractual issues and so forth and so forth? Because one moment there's an agreement, the next moment it is off again. One moment, there's no consistency. Have you asked yourself the question why? Could there be something greater than what meets the eye? I just thought that if there's no answer to that, it's fine. But I just thought that I must raise it, because now when I looked at it, I just got a different feeling. I want to know, man, it cannot be. We just recently, I don't want to go into history of strikes, but the most recent one is a bus strike. Did it last for a month? Did it last for 2 months? Mm. Just a month. Now that one, why does it take so long? Thank you.
Yes, sir. Chair, you missed the question, or maybe you think it's just a comment, and that's regarding the export and import of electricity.
Thank you. And also the Kabora Basal is here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got something here. I don't ever remember ESCOM coming to us to discuss this 16% increase with us. And I should think, forewarned is forearmed. We could have given advices, whatever. But then if ESCOM comes to us only when it's hitting the wall, it is not the way we need to operate. We are not crisis management as a select committee. And again, I'm seeing here that NUM has abandoned percentage increase in its wage demands from National Power Utility ESCOM. Instead, submitting a request for a large increase of between 3.2 and 3.5 for the lowest paid workers. And these demands are very reasonable, said this person, who is this, Lesiva Sishoka. And you are here, you are not saying anything, you are not telling us, you are not saying anything about this, unless if you are going to meet the demands. This is the thing from internet.
Thank you. Can you respond?
On the import and export, the issues around Kabora Basa and the difficulty with importing power was unique to the power station. There were problems with the power station and the particular line bringing the power. So that doesn't affect imports and exports directly to Kabora Basa, but it didn't affect exports to other neighboring countries, and that's the reason. So it was unique to the particular plug, because generally there are a few lines that are going, and if there's a problem with the line, you won't be able to import or export. But I think, Chair, that's really the explanation. The faults and the problems were unique to the Kabora Basa station, and then the lines from the station. Chair, on the last issue raised by the Honourable Member, I can't comment on that. I mean, I was here to talk about the MIPD3 determination. There are labour issues happening at the moment in negotiations. So, you know, I'm unable to comment on that.
Okay.
I'm done too.
No, there was a comment.
Maybe I was absent-minded concentrating on something. I'm not certain. I don't recall you responding to the 16% increase, whether you have
responded to that or not. Chair, that one I must apologize for. I'm just trying to recall, when we were preparing the submission, we did come to Parliament numerous times. We've come to the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises, Energy, and I think the Select Committee of Energy, and Chair, I do apologize. It must have been an oversight that we didn't come to this committee, but I do apologize.
The programs that ESCOM usually do, visiting constituencies, I think also on the comment that was made by Honorable Dow, if you can regularly do those programs, go to constituencies, because this information, the select committee also is able to, you know, members, not only the select committee, members of different constituencies will be able to assist also to, you know, for information to the public. Those programs are very important. And I'm not sure, I heard that you are still going to do them, and I'm actually encouraging you to do them as soon as possible. And also, I think what Honorable Mabija is saying, communication is very important. Even if we don't call you to this committee, for ESCOM to communicate with the select committee, it's very important on issues. Not only, yes, we called you to come to us, but if you've got information on anything, it's not nice seeing things on the paper, reading things on the paper.
But if we communicate, it's important that we get the first-hand information and we are able to even, you know, explain to our constituencies. Even this one, it's on internet. But it's important that we follow up. Thank you so much.
If I can just say one thing, I didn't comment on the earlier comment about the stakeholders, because I think it's good advice and we must think about it, because I didn't want to sound defensive. Chair, we're doing a lot, but if the Honourable Member says that his perception, in my view, we must take it seriously no matter what we're doing, because the point is well made. We need to communicate better generally. Chair, I do apologize. I accept with this committee as well, we need to improve and open the channels of communication and be more effective, so I accept that. But just to mention, Chair, that during the application period, we had a particular communication strategy where we prepared information, booklets, leaflets, where we went out in the communities and we distributed and spoke about it. What I'm hearing is we must just rethink that and try and test if it's getting to who we believe it should be getting to. Then, Chair, what we have at the moment is the 49M campaign, where we are going to various places and communicating about energy efficiency, using energy wisely, all of that. And again, Chair, I take your comments that we must reflect properly, because communication sometimes is not only about what you're doing, it's about what are people understanding, so we must keep testing it. But, Chair, I didn't want to comment because I take the point. We must. It's an area you can only improve. And again, Chair, apologies that we missed your committee, and we'll not do that again, Chair.
And the 49M, I remember when it started, I attended Kukule Tour, and I raised with the department to say, the select committee members, if when you go to different areas in different provinces, if you inform us, members will definitely be there with you. If we are not, we will encourage our constituencies to be there. So if you don't give us that information, if we sit down, look at TV, and we see that there was this event, 49M, maybe even all the people understand what 49M means.
49 million.
Yeah, I know it's 49 million. I know, you know, but I'm saying the people, most of the people don't understand what 49M is. I was there at the launch at Megawatt. I understand what 49M is, but we want our people to understand all these things. Thank you very much. Honorable Khruv, never you are energetic.
Chairperson, I am. Only a question. Can't we arrange an oversight visit to Van Rienen at the Hydro? There's a big project on there with the two dams. What is it?
Ingula.
I think that will be quite interesting to see how it is going to work.
Yeah. Thank you. We will look at that. We don't know when will the oversight period come, but we will look at that.
After election.
Sorry. Thank you very much, Mr. Mohammed, and your team. Okay. We thank you for the information that you have shared with us, and we really hope in future we will be able to communicate more effectively. Thank you very much, and the meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you.
The prison left you to